Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the August NJ EDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1 and then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to speak and provide comments. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star and then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Board. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manera, if we could do a roll call, please.
Okay, yes. Good morning, everyone. Okay, so we have Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Okay, Commissioner Marlene Caridi from Banking.
Present.
Brian Wilson from the Governor's Office.
Good morning.
Jennifer Keys Maloney for State Treasurer Moyo.
Here.
Paul Ewan for Labor Commissioner Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner LaTourette.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here, Manera.
Fred Dumont.
Morning, here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Rosemarie Hicks.
Here.
Tia Marley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Phil Elagia. Okay, not yet. Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. Our first item on the agenda is to approve our July 14th EDA board meeting minutes, which you all have a copy of. And again, as our protocol, please state your name for the record when making a motion or a second. Can I get a motion to approve the July 14th meeting minutes?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Elizabeth Dragon.
I get a second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let me move to some brief chairman remarks this morning. While we are continuing to make progress toward recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic, we're not out of the woods yet. Our current relief programs, including the Emergency Assistance Grant and Loan Programs, as well as additional programs that we'll be rolling out in the coming weeks, will help businesses navigate these new challenges and implement the changes they need to be prepared for whatever the future holds. Still, it is clear that we are moving toward a future where COVID-19 is no longer an acute threat. We are preparing for that future now with forward-looking initiatives that will outlast the pandemic and its immediate aftermath. The Main Street Recovery Finance Program, Aspire, and other programs created under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020 will pave the way for long-term equitable growth in communities throughout New Jersey. These initiatives focus specifically on growing our innovation ecosystem and other priority sectors such as offshore wind, film, and clean energy are also preparing New Jersey for a stronger, fairer recovery from COVID-19 and long-term success. Tim, if I could turn it over to you for the CEO's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, and great to be with everyone. I think the good news about this morning's meeting after July's Votorama in honor of what's going on in D.C. this week, this is a relatively concise agenda today, but we have some big important items on the agenda that we're looking forward to a good discussion and hopefully approval of as it relates to things like the wind port and the long-term ground lease that we're excited to enter into, as well as the Main Street program, which is one of the programs that the chairman just mentioned. that was in the bill the governor signed back in early January as part of the Economic Recovery Act. So it's one of the keystone programs of that package. And then Ty and Christina and Maggie will tell us about that in a few minutes. Just a couple of things to report. We continue to push along at a great pace on the Emergency Assistance Grant Program. We've now made more than 67,000 grants sent across all phases of the program, and you may have seen some press reporting. We were really I'm very proud of the fact that because of the commitment from Governor Murphy and legislative leadership to supporting small business during this crisis, New Jersey ranks third presently. That's subject to change as other states continue to roll out programs, but at least as of 2 weeks ago or so, no state other than California and New York had allocated more grant dollars to small business than Governor Murphy and the legislature here in New Jersey, which is something our team is incredibly proud of and humbled by as we think about how much work has gone into and will continue to go into the long-term compliance around that ambition. But when we think about putting small business first, obviously this is a public health crisis first and foremost, but right behind it, it's been a small business crisis. I think Governor Murphy has prioritized supporting small business from as early in the pandemic as possible. If you recall, we stood up our first program. Phase one of this grant program was stood up before there was a CARES Act at a special board meeting in March of last year. And from that moment till this very moment, I'm sure the team is approving grants as we're on this call, continue to prioritize pushing dollars to small businesses. I also want to note, in particular, we've really tried to focus on the smallest businesses, in particular micro businesses, across the phases three and four. We've already approved a little more than $230 million, closer to $240 million of grant funding for businesses with under five employees. In phase 4B, which the governor just signed a bill to allocate some funding towards, we expect to have another $50-plus million go into the micro business category, bringing that total to nearly $300 million of direct support for the very smallest businesses in our state, the micro business community with under five employees. So that, I think, is an incredibly potent example of the reach and the depth of the programs that we've tried to stand up. We'll continue to stand up new programs. We're in the middle of, we'll be doing some marketing later today on a program called the New Jersey Community Stage Relief Grant Program, which this board approved in July to support performing arts venues and the arts community, which is part of Governor Murphy's commitment to recovery, as well as supporting our arts and not forgetting the critical role that arts play, not just in our economy, but in our communities. And so we're excited about that program as well. We also launched in the last week or two an extension of the ERG program, the commercial ERG program. As part of the Economic Recovery Act, the governor and legislature agreed to extend both commercial and residential ERG for a year, basically to give us some breathing room while we stand up these new programs like Aspire and Emerge, particularly Aspire, to have some tools available for particularly, commercial and mixed use and residential and affordable housing projects that we're eager to get going. The applications for both commercial ERG and residential ERG are both now active and open or will be open on the commercial side. But we put a notice out that that's coming soon, but not, and next week they will launch applications for the commercial ERG applications, so we continue to be able to serve projects while we stand up the longer term programs as well. Last thing I'll mention is around the Windport, and Jonathan and Brian and the team will do a couple of very important items around the Windport. We continue to make great progress there ever since budget was passed, the funding was allocated. Continue to have really strong momentum, including hopefully the approval of our ground lease today. We've been on the ground a fair bit. Our team was in Salem County several times last week and doing lots of really good community engagement and partnering with our partners in labor, as well as doing really good community outreach around diversity and inclusion for how we're thinking about that project. And so just continues to be a comprehensive effort to advance a game-changing project that we'll be talking about in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. So with that, I will yield the floor, or happy to take any questions, but yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Well, let's move on with our agenda this morning. Some committee reporting here. I'll report for both the policy and real estate committees, and I'd like to highlight two items that stand out on today's agenda. Today's staff will present recommendations on a special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed new rules for the Main Street Recovery Finance Program. which will support the small business community across the state. In addition, the board will consider an action to approve the authority entering into a ground lease for the New Jersey Wind Port, a critical step in support of the state's offshore wind efforts. These efforts are both impactful and strategic. I want to thank Tim and his team for the continual due diligence and professionalism while preparing the board members on matters coming before the board for action. I am pleased to see these matters coming today to the board for consideration. Our first item on authority matters is the special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed new rules, the Main Street Recovery Finance Program. Ty Cooper, Chief Community Development Officer, making opening comments, and Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Small Business Services, Community Development, and Maggie Peters, Program Manager, Small Business Services, Community Development, presenting. Ty.
Thank you so much, Chairman. You guys get three for one today, so that's a good thing. Tim and Chairman, thank you so much for giving opening remarks and really just setting the groundwork for the importance of what we're doing with this recovery program. The Main Street Recovery Finance Program is one of the key components of recovery efforts, and I want to make sure we focus on the recovery. You've done really substantial work throughout the pandemic, but what we're really trying to do is focus on recovery efforts. And this program is going to provide grants and loans to small and micro businesses. To develop these programs, we solicited direct feedback from small businesses across the state through roundtables, both virtual and in-person, following all COVID guidelines. We held three public listening sessions, and we've also done surveys. We take the information and the constructive feedback we get seriously, and we incorporated those into the programs that we're going to discuss today. The programs that we developed are going to be pilot programs that will provide loans to other microbusinesses and other lenders like CDFIs and a new one that we're working with, which is minority depository institutions, increasing our lending support to New Jersey microbusinesses. As a gentle reminder, the programs that Christina and Maggie are going to outline today are two of the programs. We plan to launch additional programs, so yes, we will be back to the board. One of the programs we're really excited about is a forgivable loan for micros that will be coming back to the board in October and November. But again, just want to give kudos to both Christina and Maggie for excellent work, excellent research, really making sure that they were reaching those that were most in need for micro and small businesses. So I'm going to turn it over now to Christina and Maggie. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ty, and thank you, board chairman, and all our board members and the public as well. I would just want to apologize in advance. It's going to be a lengthy request because there's a lot of information to cover. So I'm going to highlight some of the quick items that were identified in the memo, and then Maggie will basically highlight the specific details around the two products that will be presented for approval today. So first, staff is requesting the approval of the Main Street Recovery Finance Program rules. They have been reviewed and approved by the Office of the Attorney General and Office of Administrative Law. The second action item that we're requesting for members to approve the creation of the Main Street Recovery Finance Program, which was established through the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. And it's essentially utilizing a $100 million appropriation from Treasury to then allow EDA to create products. The products that can be created under the Main Street Recovery Finance Program can fall into three categories as the law states, which can consist of grants to small businesses as defined by SBA, loans to microbusinesses, which are defined as businesses that make less than $1.5 million in revenue and have less than 10 full-time employees, and resources like grants and loans to lending entities that support microbusinesses and that have at least 10 years of experience servicing microbusinesses. These potential lenders can include community development financial institutions, otherwise known as CDFIs, and minority depository institutions, or MDIs, zone development corporations in cities with a population of 100,000 or more, community development corporations, and economic development corporations as well. The third action item is members will be approving the allocation of the Main Street Recovery Finance Program to be used to create two grant products to support small businesses statewide. These are two products that have been previously piloted but only offered in the small pool of cities and will now be permanent programs that will be offered statewide and will exist as long as the funding is provided through Treasury. Staff has adapted these products based on lessons learned and improved the products to make them more attractive to small business owners but also included the statutory requirements. These products will offer direct support to a small business when they need it the most. They may have taken on new commercial space in the last year, or already incurred costs to purchase equipment or pay for renovations to their space to accommodate the new operation standards. And these two products will put money back into the small business owner's hands,
plus also support the small business owner to pay their employees a more livable wage. The fourth action item is members will be approving for the staff to have the ability to use the Main Street Recovery Finance Program to support additional administrative costs that may come up when necessary. This would allocate $500,000 to hire temps if they are needed to administer either two of the programs. The fifth item will be granting staff the ability to have delegated authority for approvals and appeals for the two grant products. Then finally, staff is seeking the approval for the CEO to have the ability to allocate funding from one program to another in case one is not fully utilized. The CEO will have the ability to add additional funding when necessary, but not exceed twice the amount of the original allocation per grant product. And this is really to have the flexibility if needed for a product that may be in more demand by the public versus a product that may be underutilized, so the funding can be fully utilized. As Ty mentioned too, I just want to highlight staff will be progressively coming back to board members to request approvals and to create and administer additional products under this program since it is the funding source. Micro and small business owners will have several products to choose from as we progressively launch products in the near future. And now Maggie will highlight the specifications around the two grant products.
Good morning, Chairman and members. Staff is requesting approval to create the Small Business Lease Grant. This product will support the growth and success of small businesses by providing grant funding to cover a portion of lease payments for businesses that have leased new or additional space. This program will offer two grants, one upon execution of the grant agreement, which will be 20% of the annual lease payments, and then another grant 12 months later for an additional 20% of annual lease payments. This recovery resource will help establish and grow small businesses while also helping to fill space that is currently vacant and will also prevent future vacancies. The Small Business Lease Grant is a product that will have a $10 million allocation with a 40% or $4 million set aside for businesses located in eligible Opportunity Zone census tracts. This program will replace NJEDA's existing Small Business Lease Assistance Grant program. To be eligible for the Small Business Lease Grant, the business must meet the following eligibility requirements. They must be in good standing with our sister agencies, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Treasury, and of course, EDA. All applicants will be required to provide a current tax clearance certificate from the New Jersey Division of Taxation and will be required to certify that they are not in default of any other program administered by the authority. Businesses must meet the SBA definition of small businesses based on employee count and NAICS code. Their lease must include 250 to 10,000 square feet of market rate office, commercial, or retail space. A lease of more than 10,000 square feet is eligible, but the program will only provide grant funding for the first 10,000 square feet of space. EDA will determine if the lease is market rate at time of application by using comparable market rates provided by a third party. This space must be first floor street level space. Businesses leasing two floors, of which one floor is street level, would be eligible. The lease must be for a minimum 5-year term and cannot have been executed more than 12 months prior to the date of application. Applicants cannot terminate an existing lease and enter into a new lease for the same square footage in order to pursue this grant. Grantees must occupy and operate in the lease space for the full year under which reimbursement is requested. If they default on lease payments or leave the space, they are no longer eligible for the grant and must repay the funding that they received from the EDA. Applicants are limited to one application per location. If a small business owner has one EIN with multiple locations, they are able to file one application per location. High-tech and business incubator members in not-for-profit facilities would not be eligible for independent lease incentives. However, operators of incubators are eligible. The landlord and tenant cannot be related parties, and there will be a landlord certification form to ensure the tenant is in good standing. Not-for-profits are eligible for this grant. Any grantee will be required to opt into the minimum wage requirements at time of application, which is required by statute for the compliance period, which will be 5 years, since that's the required lease term. There will be no application fee, but there is an approval fee of $100 prior to the execution of the grant agreement. Since the fees are reduced for the business owner, staff is seeking approval to take a 3% administrative fee to support the administrative costs incurred to process this product. Now for the Small Business Improvement Grant. Staff is requesting approval to create the Small Business Improvement Grant, which would provide a total of $15 million in grant funding to small businesses through the Main Street Recovery Finance Program, with a 40% or $6 million set aside for businesses located in eligible opportunity zone census tracts. The purpose of this grant is to support the growth and success of New Jersey's small businesses by reimbursing business owners for costs associated with making interior or exterior capital improvements or purchasing and installing new furniture, fixtures, and equipment. The grant will reimburse 50% of total eligible project costs incurred on or after March 9, 2020, but no more than 2 years prior to the date of the application, with a maximum grant amount of $50,000 per EIA. Just like the small business lease grant product, to be eligible for the improvement grant, the applicant must meet the SBA definition of small business, be in good standing with sister agencies, and provide a valid tax clearance prior to approval. All applicants must also certify at time of application that they are not in default of any other program administered by the authority or the state of New Jersey. Landlords are not eligible for the Small Business Improvement Grant. This product is intended to directly support small businesses. Businesses must also commit to meeting the wage requirements and remaining in the facility. For grants of less than $25,000, the small business must commit to meeting these requirements for 2 years after the execution of the grant agreement. For grants of $25,000 or more, the small business must comply with these requirements for 4 years after the execution of the grant agreement. Additional eligibility requirements for the small business grant are the following. The business must rent or own and operate from the facility as a commercial business. Project costs must be at least $5,000. Home-based businesses may only receive reimbursement for new equipment purchases and or installation. Home-based businesses are not eligible for reimbursement for renovation or improvement projects. Not-for-profits are eligible. Applicants are eligible to receive a small business lease grant as well as a small business improvement grant for the same location. However, only one award is allowed per EIN for this product. Applicants must obtain and are responsible for all applicable local approvals. If renting space, the tenant will need to provide the landlord's written approval for improvements to the location. Applicants will be required to provide documentation evidencing payment for project costs associated with capital improvements and/or furniture, fixture, and equipment purchases and installation that have been completed prior to approval. Green building standards will apply to projects over $50,000. Affirmative action will be applicable to contractors who have 4 employees or more on staff. There will be no application fee, but there is the approval fee of $100 prior to execution of the grant agreement. And since the fees are reduced for the business owner, staff is seeking a 3% administrative fee to support administrative costs incurred to process this product as well. For both programs, applications will be reviewed on a rolling basis and based on availability of fundings until all the funds are committed. EDA staff will be responsible for reviewing applications and approving projects for assistance under delegated authority. And that's it. Thank you.
All right. Do we have any questions for Christina and Maggie?
Hi, this is Rosemarie. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Maggie, I had a question on the second one, the Small Business Improvement Grant. Did I understand you correctly that the reimbursement, they'll be reimbursed and they must pay for the improvement or the equipment prior to them receiving approval that the of the grant? Maybe I misunderstood that.
That's correct. It is a reimbursement.
So the small business owner would have to expend the money first and then apply for the grant with no...
Correct.
So if they
would...
Do we have any wiggle room on that? Only because I could maybe, like, if someone is interested in this program and they do want to make some improvements, I would like to hope that they, and they're spending that money as a small business owner, $5, $10, $15, $20,000 is quite a bit. So is there a way that we can review the application, so the way that we do like the pre-registration for the different phases, so that the person has an idea or the business has an idea as to whether or not they're, you know, going in the right direction or something before they spend the money thinking that there was going to be a reimbursement?
Yeah, that's a really good and fair question, Rosemary. I hadn't thought about that, and I'm glad you raised it. Team, is that in statute, or as Rosemary put it, do we have some wiggle room flexibility on that?
So,
and can we do that? Can we do that operationally? Meaning, can we do some sort of, when we do the application, can there be a, you know, at least get a ticket and, you know, a deli number that says, okay, you've cleared some eligibility threshold. You know, you can proceed with some confidence, because the point Rosemary just made, I think, is a really good one.
Right. This is Gabriel. So if I understand Rosemary's question, it's not that she is asking for the program not to be reimbursement, but to work with the applicant before the formal application, for the applicant to have some sense that what they're going to spend money, it will be eligible or not before they actually do it. So to me, that doesn't seem like it's a formal part of the program. It's like pre-application, almost like training and technical assistance. And Rosemary, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what it sounds like.
Well, I think the other point would be if we run out of money. Meaning, you know, business
right,
X applies on December 15th and we ran out of money on the 14th, and they're
right.
They'd be in a tough position.
Alert businesses, if we are getting close, the usual practice is to alert on website and other ways to say, you know, the program's winding down, you need to apply by this date, or, in fact, there is no more source of funds.
Yeah, that's a really good flag, Rosemary. We will work on that, because that's a very, very, very fair point in how we operationalize this.
Okay, and my other question is regarding the time and space. So if it's less than $25,000, the business has to commit to stay in that space for 2 years once the dollars are approved and or once the dollars are in hand.
Correct.
And then, is that correct? So it's
a
two and a four, not a two and a five.
No,
okay.
two and a four. Yeah.
Okay. And this one, and then on the first one other clarification. You had mentioned, I think this was Maggie again, but she was going through the detail. So are you saying nonprofits are eligible or they're not eligible? Because I think
they are eligible.
Okay. And that 3% administrative, is that 3% separately for both programs, which would make it a cumulative 6%? Is that correct?
Yes, it would be 3% for each product that EDA would be receiving. Yeah.
Okay.
But that doesn't add up to 6. That adds up to 3 across the board.
Not cumulative.
Yeah.
So
it's a total of 3, not 3 for number 1 and 3 for number 2.
It's 3% of each pool. So 3% of if you add up the two pools together, it's 3%.
3% of the 6 million, for program 2, and 3% of whatever that 20 million or 10 million was for product 1. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Other questions for Christina and Maggie? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Paul Ewan, second.
Thank you, Paul. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
This is Rose Marie. I oppose.
Okay. Next item on the agenda, MOU with Rutgers University for research grant. George Santos, Chief of Staff, presenting. George.
Good morning, Chairman, members. I'll be brief. The board is requested to approve an MOU with Rutgers University for use by Rutgers faculty in conjunction with a leading Israeli university. For background, the state of New Jersey and Israel have strong ties going back decades. In 1988, then-Governor Kane signed a sister state agreement between the state of Israel and state of New Jersey. Subsequently, the New Jersey-Israel Commission was established to promote the development of trade. To promote the development of trade, culture, and educational exchanges, capital investment, and joint business ventures. In 2018, the authority signed an MOU with the Israel Innovation Authority to strengthen economic ties and enhance bilateral partnerships. In addition, there have been several collaborations between New Jersey and Israeli institutions of higher education since. To further build upon this relationship, the authority wishes to enter into an agreement with Rutgers University, where it would contribute $50,000 to an internal Rutgers grants fund, to which Rutgers will also contribute $50,000. Rutgers would then seek out and partner with an Israeli university, which would match the New Jersey fund with its own $100,000 contribution. The joint research would then target industries including pharmaceuticals, medtech, clean tech, nanotechnology, cybersecurity, and potentially other industries as agreed upon by the authority and Rutgers. Rutgers would also provide the authority a report on the status of these research projects going forward. That is pretty much it. Are there any questions?
Questions for George?
No questions. This is Aisha. Just a quick comment. I think this is great. I want us to also just consider, I know that there was a trip to Berlin several years ago. Would love to see us establish similar relationships in Berlin, India, other locations where there are booming tech sectors, and I think we can be very targeted about how we're attracting them. So both not just looking at those existing and strong tech economies, but also some that are burgeoning, such as in countries in Africa. So I think this is great. I would just encourage us to also look at additional opportunities, similar opportunities.
This is Jenny, too. I just would like to echo exactly what Aisha said. I think it's a fabulous program, and I'm hoping we can expand in other areas. So in any event, fully approve and happy to move this if you need.
Other comments or questions for George? If there's no comments or questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Elijah, second.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving to the next matter on our agenda, port infrastructure. The first item here will be the PSE&G Windport ground lease. Jonathan Kennedy, Managing Director, Infrastructure Economic Growth, presenting. Jonathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members are asked to approve the authority entering into a ground lease with NDAV LLC, an affiliate of PSEG Nuclear, for the purpose of building and operating the New Jersey Windport. The lease is for a 28-year initial term and 78-year maximum term and covers 7 parcels totaling approximately 123 acres. Members are also asked to approve up to $10 million in initial funding for cost reimbursement to NDEV for existing facility relocation, permitting support, and design-related approvals. Further, members are asked to approve up to $250,000 for title insurance for the leased premises. The securing of property rights through a long-term lease represents a significant milestone for the Windport and follows more than a year of negotiation between parties. Its terms enable the state to realize the full scale of its ambition to develop the nation's leading offshore wind marshalling and manufacturing hub in Lower Alloways Creek, Salem County. Further, it puts in place the mechanisms necessary to ensure that the port can seamlessly and safely coexist alongside PSEG's existing nuclear operations. The lease provides for individual parcels to become leased premises over time, recognizing differences in site readiness and development preconditions. Specifically, parcel drawdown is contingent on regulatory approvals, availability of funding or financing, parties having requisite dredge and easement agreements in place, as well as completion of any remediation as required by law. Staff are requesting delegated authority for the Chief Executive Officer to authorize parcel drawdown, provided that the conditions precedent set out in the lease are satisfied. Rent levels were set on the basis of an independent appraisal by Sterling DeSanto and Associates, as well as extensive negotiations between parties over the past year. This appraisal determined the as-is market value and implied market rent, drawing on comparable land sales and assuming a given rate of return. The final base rent agreed with PSEG through NDEV reflects EDA's appraised value with a 7% rate of return. In addition, the authority will pay NDEV a variable rent set at 0.5% of the rent that the authority secures from future subtenants, subject to a $350,000 annual cap. This variable rent seeks to ensure NDEV is jointly incentivized to complete facility relocation sooner and to grow port revenues. The need for incentive alignment also recognizes the high degree of control, in this case by the landlord, again, given proximity to its nuclear operations and potential, therefore, to impact the port's development timing. As a net lease, the authority is also obligated to reimburse NDEV for all security, real estate taxes, nuclear insurance, and proportional road maintenance costs pertaining to the leased premises. These costs are estimated at $2.6 million a year on average over the 28-year initial term, with the bulk of costs comprising nuclear-related security and nuclear insurance. The authority intends to pass through a majority share of additional rent to future subtenants. In totality, the authority's rent obligations under the lease are estimated at $89 million over 28 years, or $3.1 million per annum on average. Future sub-rent revenues, which are anticipated to commence in 2024, will be used to defray rent obligations longer term. Rent obligations until that point are estimated at $7.4 million nominally. With this amount reimbursed the authority, or intended to be reimbursed the authority, I should say, through a future bond issuance. Beyond rent, so beyond the fixed and the variable and the additional rent, the authority is obligated to reimburse NDEF for its facility relocation costs. This recognizes that there are currently 4 facilities located on differing parcels. In addition, the authority is obligated to reimburse PSEG for costs it incurs for permitting, as well as the cost it incurs in reviewing port design. This reflects PSEG's retention of responsibility for securing regulatory permits, as well as the need to ensure that the port's design and operations conform with nuclear safety policies. The lease allocates responsibility for environmental preservation and remediation. NDEV has accepted responsibility for pre-existing site conditions and associated remediation to the extent required by law, if the property were not occupied by the authority. Turning to nuclear, given proximity to the Salem and Hope Creek nuclear power plants, The lease also sets out a number of mechanisms for ensuring that the port's design and operations conform to nuclear requirements and PSEG nuclear policies. In particular, the lease sets out an ability for PSEG, as mentioned, to review and approve design and operation plans, as well as rights of entry for the purposes of safeguarding safety, and strictly restricts permitted uses of the property to offshore wind, as well as mandatory training and limits on chemicals and other combustible fuels. These mechanisms were developed in collaboration with PSEG. In addition, PSE Nuclear may, if required by a nuclear regulatory order, impose an improvement on the lease premises or may recapture certain lease premises. Again, this is a necessary requirement under PSEG's nuclear operating license until the plant is fully decommissioned. With the support of outside counsel specializing in nuclear regulation, we've worked very closely with PSEG on the mechanisms to de-risk this for the authority and to ensure that, you know, that we have appropriate coverage for any costs, be they out-of-pocket costs or damages. So I guess in conclusion, members are asked to approve the authority entering into a ground lease with NDAV LLC, again an affiliate of PSEG Nuclear, for the purpose of building and operating the wind port. The lease is for a 28-year term, 78-year maximum term. Happy to take any questions.
Do you have any questions for Jonathan?
Hi, Jonathan. It's Rosemary. A couple questions. One, is there a rent cap on this? Maybe I missed it. You talked about the rent over a period of time with the intent to sub-rent or sublease by 2024. Yeah. Is there a rent cap?
So the certain components, Rosemary, of the rent that are capped. So the fixed base rent is a fixed rate per acre per parcel, again, based on an independent appraisal that we commissioned on best use. So the rate per acre per parcel is fixed. And then, obviously, over time, that will inflate or escalate in line with CPI. So there may be some CPI variance, but the base rent amount is fixed. The variable rent, again, is capped $350,000 per annum, but it's going to vary depending on the sub-rent that EDA is able to extract from its subtenants. So it's a proportion of the rent we're able to extract from subtenants up to a cap. The additional rent, which is the pass-through costs, are uncapped, but obviously they have to be based on costs incurred, and we have a mechanism in the lease to make sure that you know those costs are set transparently and are well evidenced. So things like security, insurance, all of those things that are passed through taxes, PSEG or sorry, NDAV have to obviously demonstrate and evidence those costs, and they have to be reasonable costs.
Okay. My second question is the relocation. Is that what I've seen that says is up to $10 million? On page 72, is that what that's referencing?
That's right. There are four facilities, PSEG nuclear facilities, on the lease premises currently that will need to be demolished in order for core construction to commence. Obviously, those new facilities need to be constructed elsewhere on PSEG's property before those existing facilities can be demolished. You know, we don't have a firm cost for facility relocation, and in the absence of bid prices and complete designs, we're asking for an initial $10 million in funding so that we can get that relocation going and preserve the schedule. And we'll come back to the board at a later point with a total facility relocation budget request.
Okay, and my last question is item number 8. On page 70, references affirmative action and labor compliance, and the phrase that there's a phrase in there that says, including agreeing to make good faith efforts to meet county employment goals. Do we have a definition of what good faith means? Because I've just had experiences where good faith isn't necessarily good faith.
So
I don't know if there's a working definition somewhere that we're working.
Yep, this is Chris Baker. Jonathan, do you mind if I jump in on this one?
No, please. Yeah.
Okay. So, Rosemary, those are all regulatory. So the definitions and the process is all set by our rules. So, in generally speaking, the good faith efforts. There's a methodology for determining whether a contractor has met those efforts.
And that's monitored by NJEDA, or that's by...
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So our labor compliance team, we have a whole team of folks at EDA that handle all of both the affirmative action, prevailing wage, and also Davis-Bacon.
And that's going to be ongoing throughout the project, correct?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
I just said that's an ongoing process.
Yes, it is, throughout the life of the project.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions for Jonathan?
The chair, it's Fred. I just want to make a comment that, we've put a lot of time and monies into this project, and I would recommend that a tour of the facility be conducted as soon as possible so the members can see firsthand what's going on there.
Great idea.
Good suggestion. Yeah.
It's a really having done that tour pretty recently, it's a really impressive site. Not only the nuclear facility, which is a hell of a thing from an engineering perspective, but the scope of the land. You don't see that often in New Jersey, in this part of the world, to have this kind of scope of acreage that can do this kind of transformative project. So, well said, Fred. That's a great idea.
Yep.
Other questions or comments for Jonathan? All right, if there's no more questions or comments, can I get a motion to approve?
It's Fred. I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Robert Shimko, second.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Elizabeth Dragon, abstaining. Due to the department having pending permits for review.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. Our next item, sticking with port
Chairman,
infrastructure. Yes.
Excuse me, Chairman. This is Brian Sabina. If you don't mind, I'd love just to provide a few comments of thanks and appreciation. Is that okay?
Sure.
The board action the action the board just took, it really is, as Jonathan said, a historic milestone for the port project, and the culmination, Jonathan said, more than a year. It's getting close to 2 years of work by a small and extraordinary team, and I just wanted to specifically thank Jonathan Kennedy for his thoughtful leadership and endless commitment to delivering the best deal possible for the state. I wanted to thank Dave Neuse, Juan Burgos, and the entire real estate department team for their expert advice, as well as recognize all of the technical and commercial support from the offshore wind and infrastructure teams, including Dennis Feeney, Aaron Roller, Julia Courtry, Paul Pinicelli, and Jeffrey Storr. It would be crazy if we were not recognizing the incredible contributions of Gabriel Chacon and his team at the AG's office, including Meredith, Gary, and Tamara. They have been tireless partners right there beside us every step of the way, and we could not be more thankful for them. We'd like to express extend our appreciation to our counterparts at PSEG for their ongoing commitment and hard work. Led by Kate Gerlich, Lathrop Craig, Anna Mutierra, and Jamie Mellon. Very much appreciate and look forward to continuing to work with them. And finally, I want to recognize the extraordinary contributions from now private citizen Betty Renard, who recently retired again from the state government, but was instrumental in leading this negotiation and this project for more than a year. Without all of these people's contributions, we would not be heading towards a groundbreaking and site visits in the coming weeks and months ahead. So this is truly a transformational project, and it has been just an incredible team effort. So thank you to everybody who's been involved.
Great. Thank you, Brian, for those comments. I know it's those comments are totally supported by this board. Your efforts, Jonathan in particular, have been tireless. And I know it's taken a great amount of work and time to get this far, and we've got a long way to go to get that port up and running. So all the best with that. Let's move to the next item on the agenda. Sticking with port infrastructure, request for additional early works funding for the New Jersey Wind Port. Jonathan Kennedy presenting. Jonathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members are asked to approve $2.6 million in additional funding for early site works for the Windport project. Funds will be used for critical path works, including the removal and processing of subsurface concrete from the lease premises, as well as other tasks necessary to preserve the schedule for core construction and existing facility relocation. The $2.6 million funding request does include $1 million of contingency. This contingency recognizes the potential for additional cost should concrete volumes be higher than our geotechnical analysis suggests, or should processing and disposal requirements be more complex and or costly. Further, staff request the right to allocate contingency across works as project needs require. Early works are being contracted and overseen by PSEG Nuclear on the authority's behalf, consistent with the terms of the letter of intent that exists between the two parties. Approval of today's request will increase early site works funding approvals to date to $10.99 million. Total funding approvals under the LOI would increase to $18 million. To cover the early works costs, the authority will draw on the $200 million in project funding included in the 2022 state budget, as well as the $13.2 million commitment to the project by the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. Happy to take any questions.
Questions for Jonathan? There's no questions. Can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Paul, you
Kenny
Bell,
I'll second. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Paul. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
This says Elizabeth Dragon. DEP will be abstaining due to the pending permits for review.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. Next item on our agenda is loans, grants, and guarantees. The Petroleum Underground Storage Tank Program. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting. David.
Thank you. This is a request for a $111,597 grant under NJDEP's Underground Storage Tank Program from James Tama. The proceeds will be used to remove leaking underground storage tanks and complete the required remediation at the project site, which is an auto service station. This request requires board approval as the amount exceeds $100,000. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David. Any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is real estate. The Camden office lease, One Port Center. Tim Sullivan will make some opening comments. Juan Burgos, Director of Finance and Development, Real Estate and Community Development, presenting. Tim.
Great, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll be really brief. I just wanted to frame this a little bit. This is a an item to expand our presence in Camden, our physical presence in Camden, which is longstanding and predates the pandemic and got a little bit sidetracked when having a physical presence anywhere was a little bit less important. But, you know, it's been a longstanding goal of mine and our teams, and I think the board's as well, to have a bigger and more front-facing presence in Camden. Our current office holds about 5 or 6 people. You can't really have any meetings. You can't host events or receptions or do anything kind of forward-facing. And so as we continue to do, you know, want to do more and more, not just in Camden but all throughout South Jersey, we thought we needed a bigger, you know, we needed a bigger space and footprint in Camden, and so that's the item here before you. So again, this predates the pandemic, but I think it's taken on a more higher strategic importance even through the pandemic as we kind of get back to being in the office and being on our front foot and having a presence in the communities we serve, putting a bigger team, or excuse me, a bigger footprint on the map in Camden is important. With that, I think Dave Noose is going to do the item, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's fine. Dave Noose.
Live television here.
Presenting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman and Tim, and good morning, everyone. As Tim mentioned, our lease for 1,186 square feet of office space in Camden will be expiring at the end of September. That current space only accommodates 6 workstations and a conference room for 8 meeting participants. We're recommending that the authority enter into a new 5-year lease for 3,610 square feet at One Port Center, our current location on the Camden waterfront. The building is a 175,000 square foot, 11-story office building with off-street parking and a top floor conference facility that are available to tenants free of charge. It's owned by the Delaware River Port Authority, a public entity, with about half of the building serving as the DRPA's headquarters. At a starting rent of $27 per square foot plus tenant electric, the cost is comparable to other Class A and B office buildings in downtown Camden. The rent would escalate 50 cents per square foot per year. The space can hold up to about 27 employees and includes 2 conference rooms that can accommodate up to 32 meeting participants, which is about a 4-fold increase in occupancy compared to our existing Camden office. The suite was fitted out about 5 years ago for the previous tenant, who left 20 workstations that EDA can reuse free of charge. The landlord will also paint the space and provide 1 month of free rent. The lease would commence as of October 1st, so the transition would be seamless and would provide for a 5-year renewal option at fair market rent. We're also requesting authority to expend up to $312,000 for furniture, fixtures, equipment, tenant improvements, and related costs to permit our occupancy of this space. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great. Any questions for David?
It's Jenny Bauer. Just one quick question. Are the employees there full-time? Are they in Camden the whole time, or is it transitional?
Right now, we have a handful of folks that are there. I think with the bigger footprint, I expect, particularly as we get back to the office, we've been transitioning back in over the summer, we'll have more opportunity for folks to, first of all, pop in and out for meetings. So, you know, if I've got a meeting in, you know, Canada, you know, noon, I'll come down there and maybe work from that office that day, so having a bit more flexibility for folks to sort of pop in and out as well. Plus, I expect a number of folks will probably avail themselves the opportunity to work there if it's a little closer home. So
okay,
it'll be full.
Great.
Yeah.
Other questions?
I don't have a question. I just have a comment or a statement that to say thank you to you guys for reinstituting your presence in South Jersey, and especially Camden. I think with all the work and progress that's been made with the various programs that's been set up over the last 18 months, it's a good next step. So I appreciate the fact that there is going to be some renewed focus in South Jersey and selected Camden, or selected will decide to stay in the city of Camden. So thank you, and we'll be happy to have you.
Great. Thanks, Rosemary.
Why'd you laugh like that, Tim?
We'll be happy to have you. Maybe it sounds like you're gonna come by and, you know, we'll be able to see you more often. More exciting.
Yeah, hopefully.
Sincere, I mean that sincerely.
All right. Can we get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second? Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda, board memoranda. There's no votes on this. Tim, tell us what we have here.
Yeah, I'll be quick. There are five items, delegated authority memos in your packet. The one I'll highlight is around credit underwriting. We continue to make really good progress on the micro business loan program. 14 more loans approved in the month of July for almost $500,000. These are kind of working capital loans for small businesses across the state. This is a pilot program that we launched last summer. It continues to make approvals that we're obviously quite excited about, and obviously represents significant not just dollars but also need and the continued need for focus on the micro business part of our community and economy, because this crisis is by no means over for particularly for the smallest businesses in our state. You also have an array of other delegated items in your pack that I'm happy to take any questions on, as well on the four other items. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. So we're going to move to the public comment portion of our meeting. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, to read the EDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting, as well as the availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses seeking information. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Given the number of members of the public on the call, we'd like to go over the NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all of those who wish to speak. And as always, speakers may submit any written comments to staff at any time. Regarding COVID-19 availability of resources for businesses, we would like to direct you to the following website, business.nj.gov/COVID, which is staffed by business advocates at the New Jersey Business Action Center. The site includes a chat feature staffed to answer your business-related questions to COVID-19. You can also call the state's COVID-19 business hotline from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, a 1-800-JERSEY-7, a 1-800-537-7397. This portal can also be accessed directly from the NJEDA main page, njeda.com. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment for our first question. And we'll go to the line of Frederick Beerum. Please state your affiliation. Your line is open.
Hearing.
And Frederick, your line is open.
Yes, hello. This is Frederick Barm from Invincible City Farms. My question is for the board. I was encouraged, the reason for me being on the call is I was encouraged by Ms. Barrett-Halton to take a look at the program you approved today, the Main Street Recovery Program, as a possible access to resources for our efforts to deal with food insecurity and food desert locations in the Garden State. Based upon kind of the NJEDA's focus on broadening and expanding the economic base in the state and the governor's key initiatives, my question is, will the agency begin to support commercialized solutions to food shortage crisis in the state? The issues are, you know, on everybody's radar with the COVID-19, but existed prior to the pandemic. I was encouraged by Sarah Colton to take a look, but the program, as I understand it, clearly isn't appropriate for the amount of research and development that needs to take place to prove out a working model that is a commercialized solution to food deserts. And so my question directly is the board in a position to commit to utilizing current and active programming to take that next logical step towards a research and development project so that there is performance-based evidence to not only, you know, bring an end to this situation, but to support the NJEDA in making funding decisions and to administer the Food Desert Relief Act provision.
Hey, Frederick, it's Tim Sullivan. How are you? I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. I'm Dan. Thank you.
Good. I know you had a great visit with the First Lady a couple weeks ago, so hope that was – I know she had a good visit with you, and I hope that was a good day for you all as well. Yeah, as it relates to the Food Desert Relief Act, we have not yet brought to the board the rules and regulations for how that program works. I take your comments. I think these comments are timely and helpful for us as we think about the working model there. Certainly, as you noted, the food security or food insecurity crisis certainly predates the pandemic, but only got worse and continues to be quite challenging and unacceptable as we roll into the recovery period. So that's why one of the reasons the governor and the legislature put the Food Desert Relief Program into the Recovery Act package. And so we'll be back to the board. Don't know exactly the timetable for that, but certainly probably later this year. With that program, while we also continue to focus on the Sustain and Serve program, which is again more of an emergency relief, food security related program. So I'm happy to follow up with you offline and get a little bit more texture on the R&D dimensions of what you're commenting on, because I didn't 100% follow that part, but our team is happy to engage and learn more and take as much feedback as we can as we stand up that other program.
Thank you very much for your response, Tim. I look forward to discussing it further with you. The reason that I'm even bringing it up at this point is to say that I believe the next logical step, as you are designing what the program and the policies are that are reflective of the Relief Act, that to have some actionable performance-based evidence would help you in that process. And that's what Invincible City is trying to do, is bring research and development project to the state that would produce that kind of information.
Thank
Got
you.
It.
And
appreciate
if there
it.
Are
appreciate
any additional questions, please press 10 at this time. And we have no further questions in queue. Please continue.
Great. Thank you, operator. Thank you, Frederick. if there's no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. I'd now like to make a motion to enter executive session to discuss leasing out real property where disclosure could adversely impact the public interest, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. A vote will take place after the board returns to public session. Can I get a second?
Fred Dumont seconds.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
This is Elizabeth Dragon. I will be abstaining from executive session due to the department permits pending.
Okay. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Operator?
The board will now enter an executive session for members of the public. You may hold on the line. Board members and staff will return to this line when the executive session has concluded.
Ladies and gentlemen, just as a reminder, you will hear silence until the board rejoins the conference. Please hold the line. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, we do thank you for your patience. You are on a silent hold until the board rejoins the conference. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, we are still on a silent hold. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, we are still on a silent hold. Please continue to hold the line.
They message me back as soon as they, okay, they're moving us over. I see that now.
And board members, you are back in the main conference.
Thank you, operator. Item on the agenda is fair market values for port subleases. I'd like to get a motion to approve fair market rents for the leasing of four parcels regarding the New Jersey Wind Port project as we discussed in executive session. Can I get a second?
Karidi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? I'd like to move on to adjourning this meeting. If there's no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. I make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, everyone. Thank you so much. This concludes our meeting. Enjoy the rest of the month of August.
Have a great day, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Be well.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.